and welcome to a Friday edition of a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host today, where there's a flood advisory in effect until 7 p.m. In fact, there's some compromised roads. Glacier Highway and the road out Thane has seen some flooding and some mudslides. We'll get you more on that as the show goes on here today. Today, we're going to be hearing about a community garage sale. Kayla Simpson's here to talk about that. Going to get the scoop on underwater pumpkin carving. Yes, you heard that right. And Jared Weens is here to talk to us about that. CBJ air quality monitoring. We're going to be talking about that with Rachel Freelander. Also, Dan Blydorn and Carrie Cummings from DEC is here as well. And Colette Costa is going to stop by, give us a lowdown on the Halloween-related events at the Gold Town Theater. That's all coming up on a Juno Afternoon. But first, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Human sex trafficking has increased significantly throughout the U.S. and on tribal lands in recent years. Lawmakers on the Navajo Nation are taking steps to prevent it. KNAU's Ryan Heinches reports.
Navajo officials passed the tribe's first law to fight human trafficking in July. It increases penalties and broadens tribal jurisdiction to allow prosecutions in such cases. Navajo Council Delegate Nathaniel Brown is a member of the Arizona Human Trafficking Council and spearheaded the tribe's law. He says the main challenge is education.
There's no word in Navajo for human trafficking. We have to come together and call it what it is. Even though the law is passed, there's still this lack of knowledge on what human trafficking is.
Officials plan to begin training tribal police, educators, and the general public to recognize human trafficking when it happens. The tribe doesn't currently have data for trafficking on the Navajo Nation, and Brown says one of his main priorities is to commission a study to show its extent. A report from the Office of Sex Trafficking Intervention Research at Arizona State University shows trafficking involving minors in the U.S. has more than tripled in recent years. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The mother of a Native American player in Maine says she will appeal the findings of a school board after it concluded no intentional acts of racism toward Native Americans took place during a recent football game. Maine Public Radio's A.J. Higgins has more.
Amelia Tuplin of Lisbon, Maine, says her family was subjected to taunts and whoops by players and fans as they were leaving the field of the Wells Warriors.
At this point, I will sit on it for a few days, and if I do not get a response. I've had legal representation contact me, and I've also looked into filing a complaint with the State of Maine Human Rights Commission.
Wells Ogunquit, CSD Superintendent James Daly, says he is willing to meet with Tuplin to discuss the matter further. Meanwhile, board members have signaled an interest in reviewing its team name and American Indian mascot. For National Native News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
The Bangor Daily News reports a school board meeting is scheduled for next week. Community members and educators are among those weighing in on the issue and the school's Indian mascot. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court Thursday challenging the Indian Child Welfare Act. The lawsuit is on behalf of a foster family. A non-native Texas family wants to adopt a 2-year-old Native American child who they've fostered since he was 10 months old. According to a press release from the Attorney General, the biological parents and grandmother support the adoption. The law was created in the 1970s and is intended to keep Native children with Native families. The Akchen Indian community in Arizona will recognize marriage for same-sex couples. The Arizona Republic reports its tribal court has ruled same-sex couples have a fundamental right to marry under both tribal and federal law. The decision comes after a 2-year legal battle by a Native woman and her partner. The tribe will reportedly not appeal the ruling. 4 other Arizona tribes are said to also recognize same-sex marriage. U.S. senators on the Indian Affairs Committee urge for improved public safety in Indian country and more resources for victim services. The committee reviewed 3 bills this week intended to promote public safety in tribal communities. 2 bills seek funding and reauthorization of the Tribal Law and Order Act of 2010. The 3rd bill addresses murdered and missing indigenous women. It would also promote more accurate data collection on missing persons in Indian country and enhance coordination between federal, state, and tribal agencies. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Yate, the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Navajo Nation Department of Self-Reliance's Turning the Curve General Staff Meeting, November 14th through the 17th. Information on this event and services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Programming support is brought to you by Playboy Spaceman, presenting Skull Party 4, Saturday, October 28th at the Jack. Doors at 8 o'clock, show at 9. Tickets at playboyspaceman.com.
And just a quick reminder that October is new member month here at KTOO, so if you're not a member yet, never had a chance to be a member of KTOO, now's a great time to do it. You can go to ktoo.org to make a gift, and it's the best time you could possibly do it, because right now, if you're a new member, you'll get a special new member mug, and then your gift will be matched 100% by Hecla Mining, so it's a great time to do it. And this is the final new member Friday, so anyone who signs up as a new member this month can get fries or a baseball hat from Parker Wilson and some free beverages from Zerelda's today and tomorrow, and you just have to stop in to redeem them. So it's October, new member month. If you're not a member, become a member of KTOO and make it keep happening here. We appreciate it. Welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you on this incredibly rainy Friday. In fact, a flood advisory in effect until 7 p.m., so be careful out there and don't go hiking where there's cliffs up above you and those sorts of kind of thing. And with me in the studio right now is Kayla Simpson. Kayla, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk about this. Well, you must be like in the throes of the organization. The community garage sale is happening tomorrow, right?
Yes,
and it's
tomorrow.
Over at the Jack. So it's a big deal. You guys are going to fill out the Jack with just other people's garbage. Right? No, not garbage. No,
that's not.
It's a garage sale. So, yeah, this is a really fun thing. I mean, it seems like there's so many garage sailors around Juneau, right? It's such a thing.
There really is. It's like a whole community here. So that really helped with the advertising, of course. There was plenty of places for us to go to tell people about. People got really excited. It was super easy to fill up those spots, and we hope it's going to be a really, really big event and maybe do it in the future as well.
So how many people are kind of have areas, and tell me about how big this thing's going to be.
Yeah, so we've got about 35 vendors right now, and we've got a lot of different stuff. We have some handmade items that people are coming with. They're coming with, like, their homemade crafts and stuff, and then there's also people just selling their normal garage sale items. It's going to be the entire facility at the Jack. It's going to be a pretty big event. We're expecting upwards of about 200 people to show up, so that's going to be really exciting, not just for...
I think at least, man.
Yeah.
200 people showed up to garage sales I've had before.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and
times 35, right?
And that insane thing, you're like, okay, we're going to do a garage sale. It opens at 7. Knock on the door 6 a.m., right? I mean,
exactly,
that's what's happening. So this is... starts at 7 tomorrow morning, and you can't get in till 7, so don't come by
don't
before
try,
7.
Don't try. Yeah, exactly. We're going to be kicking people out, right?
Go 7 till 11 tomorrow, is that right?
Yep, yeah. 7 a.m. to 11. Yeah.
It's going to be the kind of, that's kind of cool, because I also think it's neat because people aren't always in a great neighborhood to have a garage sale, you know, or they don't have a good setup at their house so that people can come in. So this is
sure.
one of those really great things that's kind of a clearinghouse. People can set up and put up shelves and all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
good place for thrifting, too. That's going to be a really awesome place to do that. Just so many different people selling a lot of different items. So that's going to be really awesome.
Now, you use that. That's like a verb. Thrifting.
Thrifting.
What's thrifting?
Thrift shopping.
Oh, thrift shopping.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Sort of like a flea market in a way.
Yeah. You can call it that. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good way to put
that
it.
That is kind of what this is like a little mini flea market.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. Any kind of other fun stuff that's happening that's not just like a normal garage sale? Do you have like popcorn or do you have stuff like that happening? Or
we are going to be having a few bake sale items, but mostly we're just going to be focusing on kind of promoting our organization, Juneau Teens for Change. That's going to be the main focus of it. We're going to have all 13 of our volunteers there. that are going to be working and answering questions and helping out. And so we'll have lots of people there to talk about that, and that's going to be kind of our main focus of the event.
Well, let's talk about that now. Tell me a little bit about Juno Teens for Change. Is this a fairly new organization, or has it been going on for a while? Or?
It is. It's brand new.
Okay.
It actually just started. We started organizing this whole thing probably November 2016, so I guess it's been about a year now almost. Basically, it's surrounded around our first trip this year, which is to Nepal in December. We're traveling there to do about 2 weeks worth of volunteer work to help rebuild schools and a lot of other buildings that were damaged in the earthquakes and floods and a bunch of other stuff that's been happening throughout the past couple years. They're really, really in need of some help, so we're going to be traveling down there. Basically, it's just an organization that's kind of focused around that global volunteerism, but also around youth empowerment. The entire organization is run by teenagers. I mean, every single item of this trip has been organized by us and ourselves, and that's been really exciting. Me, myself, I'm 17, and my best friend Cora is 18, and we're the two, the co-founders, I guess, of the organization. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited to see it kind of blooming and to see events like this coming out with so many people and so many people supporting us.
How did you settle on Nepal as sort of the goal that you were going to focus on for the first sort of year and fundraising, that sort of thing?
So we actually started as kind of a branch of Interact, which is underneath Rotary, a high school branch of Rotary, you could say. And we had thought about Nepal for a long time, actually right after the April 2015 earthquake is when we really started focusing on it. We've done a couple other things involving Nepal. We actually sponsored a teenager from Nepal last year in Interact. So it kind of just made sense. It was kind of just the next step in that gradual journey towards it. So we're really excited to do that. And then hopefully in the future we'll be picking new places and new projects to do in different areas.
And how many people are in the group that are going to hopefully get to Nepal to be part of this?
We have 13 confirmed travelers that are going this December. Yep.
Wow. So that's a major, that is a major fundraising effort, right?
It is.
That is
a
lot
of resources.
Quite a bit.
It's about 32 to 3400 per person. So it is quite a bit. So that's why we're really excited that this community garage sale is going to be hopefully such a good turnout. We're expecting to get a lot of donations, and we've already gotten a lot of really awesome support and donations from the vendors themselves as well. So that's been really helpful.
That's really cool. How does it work as far as the donation part of it goes? Is a portion of all sales, is that kind of the thing that happens, or?
Actually, it's so they paid $30 for the space itself, and so that's what their that's their donation. And then some groups have offered to pay more or donate more to the organization after they learned what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are actually donating a portion of them. We have the doghouse coming, and they're going to be selling biscuits and gravy and a few other awesome breakfast items there, and they're donating a portion of their sales to us, which is really generous.
Oh, that's
them.
Really
so,
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about the garage sale that's happening tomorrow just real quickly so the people. So number one is you worked through this through donations and all that kind of stuff, but you don't have any more room for donations. Right?
We don't have any more room for vendors. We are always open
okay.
to donations.
Okay, donations, but like donations of items and things like that, you're full up, or how
we're
is that?
We're pretty much full
okay.
on that, yeah. We are taking a few like big ticket items, kind of. We're taking bicycles, wine glasses, stuff like that that we're pretty much guaranteed to sell. We just don't want to be stuck with a bunch of stuff afterwards,
sure,
which is
yeah.
totally understandable, I'm
right,
sure.
Right, right. And but with 35 vendors, yeah, that's going to fill up the jack really easily.
It is.
Yeah.
It's going to fill it up pretty well, and we're really excited.
Are you guys already loading in and all that, or has that happened tonight?
We can't go in until tomorrow morning because there is an event tonight, but me and Cora are going at 5 a.m. tomorrow
yeah.
to start setting up, so that's going to be a blast.
Welcome to the wonderful world of nonprofits.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
This is what happens. Well, it sounds like a great event, and it's obviously a really terrific organization as well. It all goes to Juno Teens for Change, and it's the community garage sale. It's happening tomorrow. It starts at 7 a.m. It's over at the Jack. Goes to about 11 a.m., but I would get there early because that's all the good stuff
all
goes early.
All the good
early,
stuff's going to be
right?
there, yeah.
You know it, right? And is there a charge for admission, or how does that work?
Nope, admission is free.
Just walk
yep.
on in and get what you want to get
stuff,
and get your
get
stuff.
Out. Yep, that's it.
All right,
one
sounds
stop
great.
Shop.
Well, Kayla, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it, and thanks for your work and for the work you're going to be doing for the folks in Nepal, and have a great garage sale.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Paddling gladiators, pealing church bells, festivals sacred and profane. These sounds and more at the next Taku Winds concert, featuring music of Respighi, Wagner, and Brahms, plus a special memorial tribute performance of David Maslanka's Requiem, friend and former guest of the Taku Winds who recently passed away. Sunday afternoon, October 29th at 3 p.m., Thunder Mountain Auditorium. Tickets at Vendini locations and at the door.
I met a man. He was a good man, sailing and shoring, dancing the bit I can, making me foreign. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to this Juno afternoon Friday edition, wet Friday edition. Speaking of wet, I mean, my next guest is very familiar with getting super wet. Jared Weems is here from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Divers, is it Juno Divers? Is that what you're kind of, is that the name of the group sort of, or how is that?
Yeah, we're just the scientific divers within the CFOS out here at Lena Point here at Juno. So,
okay.
Just confirming that there is a UAF Fisheries Center here in Juno, first of all. And
right.
We're divers as a part of that program, and we set up this event. This is our fourth event, so we're gaining some headway.
This is the fourth annual spooktacular dive. It's the underwater pumpkin carving competition.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, but
yeah.
It's pretty entertaining to say the least.
So, how many folks typically participate in this?
So, the first annual was just a few of us, but over the last few years, we've gained a lot of support, and last year was our first year to have it at our current location out at Lena Point. Larry Dietrich has offered up his place on Harlequin Point.
I know that spot, yeah.
Mr. Dietrich is known around town, and he's got a beautiful spot out there, and it's perfect for diving,
yeah.
Especially with this fun event. And we have a big bonfire as well to follow, and it's just
seems
a fun
necessary
event.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much everybody gets out of the water right. Soaking wet and cold, so it's pretty nice to have a bonfire and some grillables.
Well, tell me a little bit about winter diving in Juneau. I've had friends who are divers for years, and they always say winter's the best time, the clarity is beautiful and that kind of thing. But what sort of gear do you need to winter dive in Juneau?
Yeah, so as we all know, Alaska, it's pretty cold in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So the majority, as in the high majority, 99% of us always go out in dry suits,
mm-hmm.
which are basically just shells that we put on over warm, insulated winter gear, and then it just keeps the water off of us well, and the air insulates us from the inside.
Is it, like 37 degree kind of temperature?
Yeah, it's pretty close to freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah, 37, 38 in the peak of winter. Right now, it's probably sitting around 41 or so.
It's okay.
We're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But, and I probably know that many of the folks around Juneau right now think they're under the deluge right now, but we'll be under some cold water tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. And are there some people that use, like, heavy gauge, like 6-millimeter wetsuit kind of stuff, too, or is it...
I occasionally dive in my 7 mil in the wintertime.
7 mil, okay.
And just to go back, yeah, usually wintertime diving in Juneau is just pristine, usually. With it all trapped in snow and up on the mountains, there's really a lot less runoff from the mountains,
mm-hmm.
so the water clears up, and it's just beautiful diving generally. Obviously, we're not really expecting that for tomorrow.
A little turbid out there
but
right
maybe
now,
if
yeah.
we get below the below the freshwater layer, right on top of the water, maybe we'll get some better clarity down at the bottom to carve our pumpkins.
Yeah, and that must be a thing, right? You need to be able to see what you're doing, right?
Yeah, otherwise you're going to stab through your dry suit and be pretty wet to be at the end.
What is the carving implement of choice? Does everyone come with something a little different?
Yeah, it's been pretty diverse selection of knives. My go-to was always a Victorinox knife. Those things are sharp.
Uh-huh.
But really, it's those little carving sets that you can get at Freddy's or a Safeway or any of the other places that are pretty good. But sometimes you get the big old dive knives that are about foot long.
That's so what I want to see. Go down with it in your mouth.
Yep.
Go down in there, get that pumpkin. You got to hunt the pumpkin first. What size pumpkins do people typically use?
Well, that's what's interesting about Juno as well, because...
And the pumpkins, don't they float?
Yeah, they do. So you gotta gut them outside the water. And then you usually just put them on your hand like a big club and swim through the water and then sink. You definitely gotta take the guts out and drown them. But I always end up putting them at the bottom and stacking rocks inside because they do float. So
usually
put rocks inside and then I start carving.
Right. It's kind of like carving in outer space or something,
yeah,
right?
It's actually way cleaner because all that debris just floats away. So then you can always see your little fine lines and get the best carving.
Very good. Very good. And there are multiple categories, right?
Multiple categories.
You gave me the list here. So best of show, of course, that seems...
Of course.
And then most creative, I like that. Best Alaskana. So what happens there?
There's always the Alaska theme somewhere in there. Yeah. So we thought we would encourage people.
This one I think I could be in the running for the Picasso Award.
that's usually a pretty good one. I think my category this year is going to be Picasso.
Very good. Just up to interpretation.
Yep.
Scariest. And then Scienceology? Is that what that says?
Scienceology.
Okay, yeah. So
being the scientific diving club, we kind of lean towards a lot of the biological pumpkin carving in the end.
Do you end up getting 10, 12, 20, how many people?
Last year we got about 11.
All right.
And they brought their families and their significant others too.
Sure.
So we had a pretty big bonfire in the end, and it was really fun. But hopefully, I'm hoping for at least 15 divers this year.
Seems reasonable.
It's going to be a fantastic event.
We're all wet anyway. Might as well throw in
some pumpkin carving.
And it says here, items to bring, got to bring your dive gear, weights, full tank, and, of course, a pumpkin and carving utensil.
Right.
And then I like this guideline, no stenciled pumpkins. It's the law.
Yeah, we had a lot of debate whether stenciled pumpkins were allowed, and we thought it was too much cheating. We want everybody to
get in there,
free form underwater.
Yeah, I like it. And so the only prep you can do to the pumpkin ahead of time is to gut it.
Yep.
And it's just gutted. It's empty. You get down there, but then from there you gotta. Now, do you find that there's people with a real plan?
It varies. Some people, you ask them 5 seconds before they duck their head, they're like, I don't know what I'm doing. But
and are there ringers? Are there like artist types? Are there people like that you know, oh, that one?
It's usually a secret until afterwards. You just got to ask people. You meet a bunch of new people at this event, so it's super fun.
That's really cool. That's funny that you'd meet new people. I would think that the dive community in Juneau would be fairly tightly knit.
It's small, but you always go with your buddies
because
you always dive with friends. And until you really absorb into the community and see who's out there,
events.
There's no real group events.
Right.
And a lot of us divers in the university in particular, we're gone most of the summer out doing various field projects or around Southeast Alaska or what have you. So really our wintertime diving is really when we want to get the community involved and get out there.
Now, are you born and raised in Alaska?
I'm not, unfortunately. But,
so does your family think you're just nuts?
My family, they don't have any clue about me, but I've been up here for about 10 years, and it's taken about that long to convince them that I was going to stay.
You're
going to
stay, right. We all go through that, And then it says bring additional treats and drinks and stuff like that. So it's happening tomorrow at 11 a.m., and it's out at Dietrich's Place, which is 17305 Point Leaner Loop Road. So that's the place to go. And people can just sort of show up, or should they call ahead of time, or...
You can just show up.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously, it's open to the public, so even if you're not a diver but you want to see what's going on, feel free to stop by.
Sounds like a fun event,
but,
no matter what.
Definitely encourage those divers, and The Scuba Tank, obviously, who we're in partner with, Phil is still open right now. So if you forgot any particular thing, head on down to Phil's. They're open till 6.
Okay.
In case you need your tank or you want to get a new dry suit because yours has a hole in it somehow or anything like that. But Scuba Tank has put up some awards, too, so that's a great thing to our award winners.
Oh, so what are some of the awards?
They're diverse,
say
that.
Okay, very good. Okay, just
they're surprise. Not a new dry suit, but they're pretty nice awards.
They're fun, yeah, okay. And then tell me just a little bit more about the UAF CFOS. Tell me about that. You were saying, to make you know, like, you're right, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that there were divers here who were UAF associated.
Right.
Yeah.
So the University of Alaska Fairbanks has several remote campuses all around the state. So that includes Juneau here as a part of the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. So I know it sounds like a misnomer, but there's actually a big contingent of UAF faculty and students and graduate students that actually work and live here in Juneau and have a lot of associations with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center out at Lena Point as well. So it's rather a large group and basically focused on fisheries and marine biology issues.
I guess I always knew that UAF had a large marine mammal program, but I didn't quite understand that it had a large commercial fishery program. I just didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just consider the fisheries around the state.
Obviously.
A lot of the biologists come out of UAF and stay in the state, and Alaska traditionally and around the world is viewed as one of the best managed fisheries in general around the world. So UAF produces some great fisheries biologists, and that's what I'm trying to become, and there's a lot of them that involve diving projects.
I was going to ask, that was the next question I had. Yeah.
My specific PhD project is searching for blue king crab out in the Pribilof Island. So I go halfway across the state, 1,500 miles, for my summer field season, which is has a significant portion of my project involves diving. So I just want to share my experiences and share my science and my love of diving with the Juneau community while I'm here in town.
Well, tell me, we have a couple of them. Tell me about that, searching for blue king crab. Now, I've seen king crab when they come up, and there's one that's crazy blue, or even seen purple ones.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about, or is it a
specific
species?
No, it's a specific species.
Okay.
So
okay.
There's a few different king crab species, obviously. The one you're thinking of, typically the Bristol Bay red king crab.
That's a red king, but it's an anomaly in the coloration of
a red
king.
Yeah, sometimes you get those weird color variants.
Okay.
Like in Norton Sound a few years ago, that's the one you're probably thinking of.
Maybe
blue red king crab came up, and everybody's like, whoa!
Yeah.
which I find super interesting as well, not just the public.
But the blue king, is that a commercial fished?
It used to be.
Okay.
So it's currently a fished out stock, the only overfished stock in the North Pacific declared by NOAA Fisheries. So my research project specifically focuses in on trying to find baby blue king crab. We are kind of hypothesizing this population hasn't rebounded because there's a potential bottleneck at the larval and juvenile stages that are stopping them.
Something's eating them
or something's stopping them. The climate's changing. There just aren't enough blue king crab around to even have a population anymore.
Right.
After the fishery collapse. So I'm really there as the first biologist really in 30 years to really have an extensive study on this.
And is part of the hypothesis that they have? I mean, I've heard about these other crab species that have these huge mounds where they are breeding and that kind of thing, but if this population is so fished out, maybe they can't do that anymore? Or?
Well, that's interesting. The king crab, even between the species, have a lot of different behaviors. So the pods that you're talking about are those little red king crab where they get together for protection. And my study species, little blue king crab, they're more cryptic, which is they kind of blend into the background. So they don't pod up like that for protection. They kind of just sink into the shell hash and rocks and stuff that are on the bottom to try and escape predators when they're young.
Right.
Obviously, when they get older, a lot of things can't really eat a full-grown king crab. So they're kind of apex predators sitting there down on the bottom, you know, being 6 feet wide with their legs sometimes.
Yeah,
and
really
creepy to some people. But, yeah, and then that kind of... once they're that big, they can obviously move around and ball up and move great distances just to find mates. So,
well, cool.
The biology is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I could go on for hours about
that's totally fascinating. It's such cool work, and it's really interesting to know that it's, even though it's happening, the field work's happening 1,000 miles away from here, it's based out of Juneau. Is a really fascinating thing that your
great.
Work is
and
based out
are,
of here.
There are blue king crab here in southeast. Some of the remnant populations here blue king crab are typically known as the colder water species. So in a lot of these fjords, there are pockets of blue king crab still around and potentially might be fished in the upcoming short-term red king crab fishery here that was just announced by ADF&G. So there might be some bycatches, some blue in there, too.
Oh, wow. Huh.
I'm really looking at that cold water species out in the Bering Sea in relation to climate change and fisheries.
Very cool. Well, that's your serious work. Your not-so-serious work is happening tomorrow, and it's the fourth...
Some would debate that.
And it's not even really work, but it's the fourth annual Spooktacular Dive and Underwater Pumpkin Carving Competition, and it happens out at the Dietrich's Place out at 17305 Point Lena Loop Road. Starts at 11 a.m., And obviously bring dive gear and a pumpkin and something to cut it with and a full tank and weights and all that stuff that you need for getting down to the bottom in order to carve. That's your technique. Now, is there a requirement if you have to be down a certain amount before you can start carving? Is that generally?
I've never seen somebody start carving in the midwater, but I would like to see that if somebody's willing to do that.
Freeform carving.
But usually people just sink right down to the bottom and get to work.
Well, have a great time doing it. It sounds like a blast. And if you all are interested in doing that, 17305 Point Lena Loop Road is a place to do it tomorrow at 11 a.m.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Thanks so much, Jared. Thanks for coming in. Jared Weems from the UAF CFOS program and the Juno Dive program. And also the Scuba Tank is helping to put this on as well. Thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right.
When asked about your interest for work or a career path, do you think, I have no idea what I want to do? If so, the Learning Connection is a free program to help you find a pathway towards a career. Match is a program providing career awareness training for those 16 and older who are out of school. Learn about careers and training opportunities that align with your skills and interests. A stipend is provided upon completion of the training. Spots are limited and applications are due November 3rd. Apply at CERC.org/careermatch. Match is a program of CERC, the Southeast Regional Resource Center.
I met a man. He was a good man. Sailing and shoring. Dancing the bit I can. Making the foreign. Ah, yeah.
Frank Black, singing about Los Angeles. Los Angeles, a place where air quality is often thought about. Thank gosh we don't have the issues they quite have, but we do have air quality issues here. And we're joined by a bunch of folks here who deal with that. From CBJ, Dan Blydorn is here. Dan, thanks for coming in. And Rachel Friedlander is also here. And Kerry Cummings is here from DEC. So thanks for everyone for coming in. And you were just saying that you're bringing the CBJ into the 21st century with air notifications. So
yeah, thanks for having us on the air to talk about air.
Absolutely.
And the CBJ has an air quality monitoring program that runs from October 1st through April 30th. And during this period of time, we can have an interesting geography, weather, wood smoke combination in the valley where the geography of the valley, its bowl shape with mountains combined with snowless, rainless, cold, sunny, blue skies, and the use of wood stoves all combine to form an air inversion. And that's what our air quality program is all about.
And tell me about that. I hear that a lot. I've heard of that, especially like Fairbanks. You hear about air inversion and you get this ice fog kind of, those kind of things. So what's happening?
Yeah, well, Fairbanks is definitely more extreme than Juneau's situation is. So really what happens is when an air inversion forms, it causes the wood smoke and particulates in the air to concentrate at ground level. And this causes the air to be unhealthy. And that's where we come in. So the DEC has a monitoring station on top of Floyd Dryden Middle School. And we monitor the quality of the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we monitor it to make sure that it doesn't exceed the standards for clean air. And if it does, or if it appears like it's going to, that's when we'll call an air emergency. And during an air emergency, all wood stove burning is prohibited.
Is it, when an air emergency gets called, is it apparent to just a person walking around in that area, like, oh, the air doesn't look good, or can it be not so apparent?
We try to catch it before it becomes apparent.
Yeah.
Just because if there's an air inversion, it'll trap wood smoke, and inside wood smoke is this very fine particle called PM2.5. I mean, this, if you take one strand of your hair, is tinier than the width of a strand of hair, like significantly tinier. And that particle, when you inhale it, it can go deep into your lungs and in your bloodstream. And so what we try to do is say, oh, man, it's looking like it's going to be an air inversion. We should call this now so that people don't load up their stoves and put more smoke into the air.
So that's a good thing for people to understand, that sometimes it'll be clear and look beautiful and, gosh, all of a sudden CBJ said I can't burn wood, but the reason is because you're trying to prevent this situation from happening. Once it starts happening, it's just trapped and it's there.
Yeah, until the weather cleans it out.
Yeah.
It could look like a smoky blanket. It could look, you could see it if we don't call it, or people load up the stoves when we do call it and put smoke in the air. So.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then how does DEC get involved in this?
So I run the monitoring station on top of Floyd Dryden and the DEC's gravimetric lab. So basically, the DEC is responsible for collecting data to EPA standards that then the city uses to call their burn bans. We have specifically a beta attenuation monitor, or a BAM, that collects continuous hourly data, and those values show the standard, and we try to keep it below the standard, and basically I hand that data off to them for calling those burn bans.
A beta attenuation model?
Monitor.
Monitor.
Yes.
What is
more commonly called the BAM.
The BAM.
A little easier.
I like that. The BAM.
She showed me that tape. So on the tape are circles, and that's an hour's worth of an air quality sample. And if it's a bad air quality hour or bad air quality day, those circles will be black, and it's that particle that you can't really see until it's really smoky or concentrated, but it's that particle super concentrated onto
like
that
soot.
Tape.
Looks like soot or something.
Yeah,
right.
And we have a super powerful pump that pulls that that down onto the tape.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, what is it? It's on the top of Floyd Dryden, you said, right?
Yeah, it's on
so
the top.
So is it a big, like, huge convex cone kind of thing?
It's kind of a box, a big yellow box.
That's just sucking in air.
It's sucking in air.
Yeah, right.
And it's called a beta attenuation monitor because it has a tape that's put in the machine, and the beta particles are shot through it to read the clarity of the machine, and then it's sampled for an hour, and then it's put back over a detector that reads how clear it is, and hopefully it's nice and clear because people have been listening to the CBJs.
Right.
Bands. But when we're having problems, it's like Rachel said, it's really dark.
Huh. And so you get this information, the CBJ gets it, and then you notify people, but you were saying that there's a brand new way you're going to start notifying people, which sounds like a really awesome service.
Yeah, that's correct. Before we get into that,
sure.
I want to say we have existing programs to inform people as well. So we have 12 signs that open up during air emergencies, during burn bans in the Mendenhall Valley. So they're bright neon yellow.
I've
we go
seen
out
them.
And open
yeah,
them up. Yep.
Sure.
And then we have our website. And then we also have a hotline, which is 586-5333. And there's a recorded message on that hotline, so people can call that and immediately know if there's a burn ban in place.
And then we also have the radio, so KNY and K2 will put out PSAs that say there's an air emergency in place.
I've read them on here before,
And then we also use the CBJ's Facebook, so that's pretty new to be using the Facebook to announce the burn bans or the air emergencies.
But all those ways of getting stuff, I guess the radio isn't as much, but all those ways are sort of there, you have to go turn something on to receive it, right? It's not a push, right? It's not an information push, right?
So a resident would either see it by chance or hear it by chance or be proactive by checking our website or calling. But the CBJ now has a new partnership with Verizon Wireless for these air emergencies to notify the public through text messaging. And the CBJ was able to arrange that partnership with Verizon Wireless for free because it's an air emergency and it's a public safety concern. And so Verizon has enabled us to send out these text messages for free so a Valley resident can sign up. And then when we call an air emergency, we'll send them a text.
Very cool. Now, do you have to be a Verizon customer to get
the
text? Oh, okay.
No, anyone can sign
They're
up.
Just sponsoring it and allowing the technology to happen, but it doesn't matter what cell service you have if you just give a phone number. So how do you do that? You go to a website to give the phone number?
Yeah, you can go to juno.org/lands, L-A-N-D-S, and then you'll see a press release about our air quality texting service, and you'll find the link to sign up.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, that's exciting.
It
right?
shouldn't be the only way, though, folks find out. You know, it is good to still be proactive and check the website, or hopefully you'll see a sign.
And just think about it before you start up your wood stove. Just give it a thought.
Check.
And with that text messaging service, we will send text messages out when we call air emergencies and burn bans, but we'll also send a text message out when it has been canceled or lifted.
Correct.
Just informing people that they're now again allowed to use the wood-burning stoves.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, anything else that we should know about as far as the air quality program goes?
Yeah, just like there's a lot of people involved in this program, so I wanted to thank NOAA, the National Weather Service office on Back Loop Road, and they help us with the forecasting of air inversions. And then obviously Carrie here and the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Division of Air Quality, who operate and maintain the monitoring station and provide us with hourly data 24/7. And then the community service officers who have the tough job of enforcing the burn ban program. And, of course, the citizens of the Valley who are really proactive and keep an eye on this, and it wouldn't be successful if they weren't willing to work with us on this program. So it's thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for coming in, letting us know about it. Once again, it's burn bans now available on via text, the notifications of both the ban and the lifting of the ban. So that's great. And you can go to juno.org/lands.
You got it.
And you can sign up for it right there.
You can also call our office at 586-5252.
All right, 586-5252, mm-hmm. juno.org/lands to sign up for this brand-new service to get texted when there's a burn ban and when a burn ban has been lifted, and especially in the Valley area. This is the main area where that's of concern,
great.
Right?
And did you want to go over the boundary really quick?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that area that we're typically talking about.
Yeah, if people are curious, if they're in the boundary of the burn ban and air quality monitoring area, it's from the airport north to the Mendenhall Glacier, west to Montana Creek, and south along the east shore of Auk Lake. And this includes the east half of the Mendenhall Peninsula. So it's, pretty geographically bound by the area that's considered the Mendenhall Valley.
Yeah, okay.
And if you're not an auditory person, we have that map for the burn ban area on our website.
So yeah, any questions, check out our website. It's pretty awesome. Lots of information.
And again, that's juno.org/lands.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Rachel, Dan, and Carrie, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know about the program, and thanks for the work you do to make our air safe to breathe.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up next, here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 27th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of Zadie Smith, born Sadie Smith in London, 1975, Jamaican mother, English father, wanted to be a tap dancer, then be a jazz singer. She managed to get into Cambridge, where she worked hard writing fiction. Wrote short stories, and one short story got too long to be a short story, and she kept writing, and eventually it became her first novel, White Teeth, came out in 2001. It's the birthday of the poet Sylvia Plath, born Boston, 1932. Excellent student. Went to Smith College. She was a guest editor for Mademoiselle magazine. Graduated highest honors, 1955. Won a Fulbright to study at Cambridge, where she met and married the poet Ted Hughes. In 1960, she gave birth to a daughter, and she published The Colossus, the only book of her poems to be published during her lifetime. She decided to write a novel based on her experience the summer she worked at Mademoiselle. She won a fellowship to work on the novel, a fellowship from the publishers Harper and Row, but once she finished the book, the editors rejected it. They thought it was overwritten, immature. The novel called The Bell Jar, published in England January of 1961, and a month later, Sylvia Plath committed suicide. Many people learned about her only after her death. They read her poems in obituaries and news stories. In 1965, a collection called Ariel was published posthumously, and Sylvia Plath became more and more popular. The Bell Jar finally came out in this country, stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for 6 months. Sylvia Plath, who wrote, "Everything in life is writable about if you have the outgoing guts to do it and the imagination to improvise. The worst enemy to creativity is self-doubt." Here's a poem for today by C.G. Hanslechek, entitled Egg. "I'm scrambling an egg for my daughter. Why are you always whistling?" she asks. "Because I'm happy. And it's true, though it stuns me to say it aloud. There was a time when I wouldn't have seen it as my future. It's partly a matter of who is there to eat the egg. The self fallen out of love with itself through the tedium of familiarity, or this little self, so curious, so hungry, who emerged from the woman I love, a woman who loves me in a way I've come to think I deserve, now that it arrives from outside me. Everything changes, we're told, and now the changes are everywhere. The house with its morning light that fills me like a revelation, the yard with its trees that cast a bit more shade each summer, the love of a woman that both is and isn't confounding, and the love of this clamor of questions at my waist, clamor of questions, you clamor of answers. Here's your egg." A poem by C.G. Hanslechek, Egg, from The Cave, Selected and New Poems, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Staples, with copy and print solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets, signage, and more, in stores or at staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The KRNN Spotlight Concert Series presents a night of country music and tribute to longtime DJ Don Drew. Local musicians Andrew and Aaron Heist, Riley Woodford, Annie Bartholomew, Patricia Hull, and more will sing tunes from Don's real country playbook. The show starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Gold Town Theater. Tickets at KRNN.org, the station, and at the door.
Real country song. How'd you do, I? See, you've met my faithful hand in hand. He's just a little broad dime. When you knocked, he thought you were the candy man.
You don't even know.
Don't get strung out.
Right. Everything here is broken.
Yeah. I was going to try to get Colette to sing along with that, but sorry.
About
equipment failure.
Something about a candy man. And a
candy man.
If I see it another million times, I might get... Look what's happening with the birds out there. It's crazy.
It's just the weirdest
but
day.
Look, they're floating.
Yeah.
They're in... Isn't that... Look at this.
A seagulls
That's my
floating.
Real dream is to remake the birds here in town. And yeah, like ravens and eagles
Could
against
happen.
The people and... Have it be all.
Wonder what Tippi Hendren's up to.
You know what? She's still alive and
yeah.
well. She lives
Let's
near
get her.
Michigan.
Let's get her.
And every year she goes to this awesome, beautiful Art Deco Theater outside of Detroit, and they do an annual showing of the birds, and she's there in person.
That's awesome.
I know, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And every year I miss her.
Oh.
By like a day.
Oh, you're running.
I know.
You're running your own theater here.
I'm a little busy, Tippy. Yeah. Tippy, you're 90. Why don't you visit me?
We're playing this amazing, of course, well, number one, we heard that PSA about the Don Drew concert.
Don
That's
Drew.
Going to be happening next Wednesday, November 1st, over at Gold Town Nickelodeon. This is something you've talked to me about for years and years. We've kind of discussed that, and awesome Scott Burton and you got together and started arranging it and got it
awesome
together.
Awesome Scott Burton and
so
just
cool.
Regular old dumpy me.
Yeah, well.
Terrific.
So it's got to be a star, you know.
Someone's got to be, okay. 11 years it's been, Andy. Can you believe that?
Oh, I miss him.
And we thought that was sort of appropriate, you know, it was... anyone can do a 10-year anniversary.
Right. Those 11. Are easy. Yeah.
And, yeah, we've been talking about putting this in the KRNN series for a while, and Lord only knows why it's taken this long.
For people who don't know, Don Drew was a wonderful DJ here on KTOO for years and also an excellent musician and a kind of a hallmark and a pillar of the folk festival for years and years. And really brought, you know, I would say Don Drew, more than anyone, brought to me the idea of what real country was. About,
and what real DJing was.
Well, real DJing, too. He is a great DJ. But also just that you know, I grew up loving Johnny Cash and loving Waylon Jennings and loving, like, the outlaw country guys, but not really understanding Bob Wills or not understanding these other, and you know, the great history that's around bluegrass and country music. And he brought that and personified that, and but also in a wild way didn't personify it at all because he was a guy from New Jersey, but he wore a 10-gallon hat around town, and he was worked out at NOAA as a weatherman, and just an interesting guy.
Really a fascinating individual.
So that's going to be really fun. But this weekend, before that happens, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, talk about a fascinating guy.
Yeah, right.
What? Tim Curry, my goodness. Turn it to Tim Curry. I just talked to someone today who said they never saw Rocky Horror until they were an adult, and how upset they were because, you know, they grew up with Tim Curry being in the Muppet Pirate movie and in Annie, and then they saw Rocky Horror. Oh, bless.
That's a shock.
What?
If you don't know.
Well,
and Tim Curry was a wild guy. Talk about a wild performer. He was out there.
But also a consummate actor, you know. If you ever watch interviews with him, which I'm sure nobody does, but maybe me. But he really talks about the craft of acting, and he took on that part. Well, I mean, he did it, you know, they opened it off.
Right.
They opened it in England, I believe, and then brought it to New York eventually. But he originated that part, so he was part and parcel of it. But he really took it very seriously, which is, I think, why it's so successful. And, you know, he really...
I mean, it's great music. There's a lot going for that movie, you know?
There is.
You have these, like, people that are, you know, I mean, Susan Sarandon, obviously, like, her first role that she was known for at all. Just, you know, laying in the weeds there, right?
Like, in the high weeds.
Yeah, like, you know, wow, who's this Janet? Oh, it's Susan Sarandon. That's why she's so great, you know? And then there's Tim Curry and, you know, and then Meatloaf's in
there. Little Barry Boswick in there. And then just to throw Meatloaf in just because you can.
Right, you know?
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It is, I feel like people who have never seen it have the wrong idea about it. Or maybe they have exactly the right idea.
That's what I think. I don't know.
But somebody asked me yesterday, they said, do you even like this movie? And I said, you know, I don't think I do. But I love playing it.
Uh-huh.
And I love bringing this experience to Juno. And you know, it's such a rite of passage.
I would say that I really I remember going when I was in high school, 1979.
Ooh, Lord,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah.
They had movies
New
back
Jersey,
then?
New Jersey, yeah.
Oh, they call them flickers.
And it was in I'd moved to New Jersey, and we weren't going to go to Rocky Horror. And I remember thinking, oh, my God.
What's
going
to happen to me?
Thing?
Are they going to touch
gonna
me?
What's going to go on? What's going to happen?
Like hot dogs? What's happening?
And then you go to this theater, and it was a theater that was really, they were in it, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was toast being flung, you know, everything was being flung around, and people were dressed up. And I just remember thinking, well, this is the funnest thing ever.
This was
so fun.
Yeah, that was that was sort of my similar experience.
Right.
But with the addition of a lot of Southern comfort,
right.
Which made things a little weirder. Yeah. But the same thing, I was so trepidatious. And so ours is not quite so scary. There is a lot of adult conversation that happens. As you can imagine, there's a lot of underwear.
Yes. Oh, goodness.
I was talking to somebody else. I was talking to many people, many, many friends. And they said, oh, God, Rocky Horror is so tame nowadays.
Yeah, it seems like in comparison, but it's so fun. It still has the fun factor.
It is.
Yeah.
And it is. It's true. I think the music in it is there's a couple kind of duds, but there always are in musicals.
Right. What are you going to do?
But there's a lot of fun music. And we have full shadow casts for, not quite full for tonight, but most, it's always hard to get someone to run around in a gold lamé booty shorts to be Rocky. Imagine that.
You didn't ask me.
I didn't. I mean, I'm
there. I mean, I might have to let out the shorts a little bit.
We do.
We'll fill out those booty shorts like
we'll
I used
bring
to.
We'll bring the spray tanner out.
Yeah.
But we have full shadow cast. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's when you have people who are sort of mimicking what's happening on screen. You know, we're not there to necessarily lip sync or to act the movie.
And then some scenes you would be shadowing shadows, because there's shadow scenes in Rocky Horror.
There are places that do full enactments of the entire film. We don't quite do that, partly because I think we have a lot of people here who have just never seen the film.
Yeah.
And so we want, my ultimate goal is to give you an idea of what a quote-unquote real Rocky Horror experience is, although I think ours is pretty real because the whole point, you know, this whole thing started from a bunch of crazy, rabid fans who just started saying these phrases and whatever.
Yeah, it must have started with a dozen people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so
you know,
I kind of feel like when you go to one of those shows, it feels like, okay, yeah, you're part of this community, but I feel like it's also gotten kind of so scripted over the years that it doesn't have that element of what?
Yeah, right.
Which, I mean, you know, I just spent the last hour at the Brown Boots Costume Company, located on Douglas Island, sewing.
Valerie does great work.
Finishing up sewing ghetto costumes that I found half-assed at Salvation Army 3 hours ago.
That's good.
So, you know, it definitely has that bootstrap feel to
it's a DIY version
and
of it, yeah.
And we also use a lot of bootstraps.
Yes. It wouldn't be Rocky Horror without bootstraps.
I mean, like, you know, I finally got a strobe light, but only because it was 50% off at Fred Meyer.
You got a strobe light, though. That could change the whole night.
So be warned, there are strobe lights and fog machines and toast in this production. So the way I do it, I don't like people to bring their own stuff into this show because it's, you know,
it's different viscosity potentially.
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
right.
Rice on a cement floor.
Right.
It's deadly. But I do provide everything you need for the show, including squirt guns. So, yes.
Yeah.
You get the squirt guns, you get the toast, I give you everything you need. You ain't got to
so
bring
fun.
Nothing. You're not going to bring anything better than what I have.
And mine packs out every year, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean.
So there's a show tonight at 10 o'clock, and then there's two shows tomorrow. The 9 o'clock is already sold out. And there's a 11 p.m., because if you start at 11 p.m., you do the time warp at midnight.
Oh.
See how smart I
11,
am.
11.
And tomorrow, I'm pretty excited. I'm excited about both shows, but tomorrow we have a group of UAS students who are doing the shadow cast, and they're pretty adorable and a little bit, they weren't quite sure what. I showed them like an old school garter, you know, to hold up your stockings, and she was like, what does this do? Is it like a top? It's like, oh, honey. So
it's a learning experience.
It's going to be great. We have like a 6'5" Frankenfurter for tomorrow.
I think Rocky Horror is a rite of passage. You got to go to Rocky Horror. If you haven't ever been, you got to go. Well, it's happening.
Agree.
Once again, the show's times are 10 o'clock tonight,
yes.
And then two shows tomorrow. 9 o'clock's already sold out tomorrow.
There might be a few floating tickets for the 9 o'clock.
But I like it starting the one that starts at 11:11,
yeah.
So you do the time warp right at midnight.
That sounds great. I like that.
Collect,
and then we have 2 minutes here?
We have less than 30 seconds.
Oh, I can get so much. And we have two awesome classic movies right now. One with First Appearance Theater, Dinner at 8, Saturday at 4:30 with the great John Barrymore. And then our Halloween movie is this awesome old James Whale picture who made the original Frankenstein called The Dark Old House. And that's playing at 7:06 on the 30th and the 31st because that's 666 in time.
There you go.
I'm so
yes.
Smart. Anyway, so that's our Halloween flick
right.
as well. So
Halloween happening
too.
At Goldtown Theater. Colette Costa, thanks so much for
coming
in.
Awesome. Thanks, Andy.
All right. And here we're going to be doing the time warp at midnight coming up.